This is Jay Lockenauer welcoming you to another installment of New Books in Military History. With me today is Vanya Bellinger, the author of Maria von Clausewitz, The Woman Behind the Making of On War, the famous treatise on military strategy by Carl von Clausewitz. Thank you for joining me today, Vanya. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the genesis of this book?
Hi, everyone. My name is Vanya Eftimova Bellinger, and as you can hear from my accent, I was born in the country of Bulgaria, in Eastern Europe. I'm a journalist. My background is in journalism. And I was so lucky in 2012 that the whole family archive and the whole correspondence between Carl von Clausewitz and Marie von Clausewitz fell into my lap. And from this really interesting story, I wrote my book, Marie von Clausewitz, The Woman Behind the Making of On War. And I also ended up teaching at the U.S. Army War College.
Yes, I forgot to mention that you're currently the National Security and Strategy Visiting Professor at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. But apparently it also says Professor of Clausewitz Studies on your door. I didn't know there was such a thing.
No, there was no such thing until I came. But I always joke that I'm there to uphold the orthodoxy. I'm there to uphold Clausewitz. It's in a way, I don't know. I'm not only teaching at the school, I'm also researching new documents on Carl von Clausewitz. I'm working on a new book. So also I'm trying very hard to share my knowledge, all these new things that I discovered. I'm trying to share them with my students. And sometimes they're really helpful because I'm not a military professional. And I find the new memo written by Carl von Clausewitz or something in the letters that keeps bothering me, and I don't know what to do with this information. And I go and I ask some of my students, and they're colonels and lieutenant colonels, and that takes them about 2 seconds, and they say like, oh yeah, this is actually what Clausewitz meant here, or this is the idea, this is happening here. And I'm like get a little bit angry because I don't know those things, but I guess this is the idea why I'm at the Army War College.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that maybe later on in the interview about the U.S. military's fascination, appropriate as it mm-hmm. might be, with Clausewitz's ideas about civil military relations and other matters. But let's talk first about the subject matter of the book and maybe explain a little bit more about the sources that you came across, because it is fairly rare for an historian to uncover something completely unknown, you know, the documents that no one has seen before. How did that happen?
I always joke that I owe everything to George W. Bush. and I'll explain, the story is a little bit long, but 2003, I won a fellowship at the Free University of Berlin. That was for journalism. And 2003, 2004, I was in Berlin. And that was the time of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In Berlin, Germany, if you remember, was against this war. There was a lot of debates. The political Berlin was exploding with opinions. Why United States is going in Iraq? What is happening? And so on. And that's where that was the first time I heard the name Carl von Clausewitz and the famous phrase that war is continuation of politics with other means. This is the time that I went also to a seminar for journalism, war, and peace, and so on. And then one of the texts that we studied there in that seminar was again on war. This is the time I bought my first copy around that time of On War. Now, fast forward, there was a couple of years I did different things. Then I came to the United States. When I came to the United States, I did not speak much English, so I needed to learn the language, because as a journalist, I learn languages by writing or by speaking. So I needed to find a program. I applied for a program in military history, This is how I came back to Karl von Clausewitz, because in military history, Clausewitz is this oversized figure because of his theory, because of the book on war, it became, with one of my professors, John Kuhn, Dr. Kuhn, it became kind of a joke between us that I said, like, well, I'm going to write someday a book about Marie von Clausewitz, because Marie actually is the one who published on war. Karl von Clausewitz never finished the book. So it became sort of like a running joke between me and Dr. Kuhn. And every time he will see me, he will ask, so what's happening with Marie von Clausewitz's book? So it among my friends, that became also like a joke. Vanya is writing a book on Marie von Clausewitz. And actually, I had to go and write this book finally. 2012, I went to back to Berlin, to the German archives, and I wanted to see if they had something. There, of course, there was nothing in the archives on Marie von Clausewitz. But the archivists sort of felt really sorry for me. So they said, like, well, ma'am, if you leave your email address and your cell phone number, maybe someday, perhaps, whatever, if something shows up, give you a call. Now, I felt like that's about it. I should have kept my mouth shut and never saying anything about Marie von Clausewitz. Now, fast forward like just a couple of months, in December 2012, I got this incredible email from the director of the Prussian Privy State Archives. And in this email was, are you still interested in the whole Marie von Clausewitz thing? Because we just received the complete correspondence between Marie and Karl von Clausewitz together with some other documents. We just received them as a deposit. What has happened, this is this very this aristocratic German family. They decided to open their family archive, and they gave it to the Prussian Privy State Archive. Now, the family, the Butler family, they are direct descendants from Marie's brother Fritz von Bruhl. Marie and Karl von Clausewitz did not have any children, so everything went to Marie's brother. And then Marie's brother did not have any sons. He had only daughters. And then the daughters had daughters, and so on. So the family name was lost. The name was lost. People basically never really thought to look for those papers. Not even I. I was not also not thinking, maybe I should go and call back the family. Maybe I should look at the family tree and see who might have something. No, I was just really lucky. Oxford University Press, they learned that I had those letters, that I've been working on these letters, and I was thinking to write a biography of Marie von Clausewitz. So Oxford University Press offered me a book contract. And then all these incredible things happened. So I sometimes joke that I'm like Forrest Gump in this story. I just keep running. I just keep running. Like, things just keep happening, and I'm just like relentless, and I just try to do my best. I just keep running.
I think that's an important lesson too for aspiring historians, that it's both a combination of persistence, which is required, but also serendipity plays a huge role in how you define your topics. And obviously the availability of these letters is an important factor here. This raises the issue that you discuss in the book, that in some ways Karl and Maria, because of her aristocratic background, are an unlikely match. I mean, Karl has a von in his name, but he's really from a lesser family,
yeah.
Whereas Maria comes from a really eminent family.
Yes, exactly. If 1802, when they met, they came from two different worlds. She was this granddaughter of Heinrich von Bruhl. Heinrich von Bruhl was incredibly important figure figure in the 18th century Europe. He was the prime minister of Dresden, prime minister of Saxony, the Kingdom of Saxony. If you ever been to Dresden, this incredibly beautiful city, when you walk, most of the buildings there were built during the tenure of Heinrich von Brühl. Also, when you go in the Zwinger, in the palace in Dresden, and you see all these nice that marvelous section of Renaissance paintings, they also, most of them come from the time of Heinrich von Brühl. Now, Heinrich von Brühl also almost destroyed the Saxon government, you know, like his expenditure ruined the Saxon's budget. So this is why he's like such a controversial figure. In a really strange twist of fate, Maurice's father, he went to serve in the Prussian court, and he was the governor of the royal children of the crown prince, and later the king Friedrich Wilhelm III. This is the king who was so important for Clausewitz's life. He was that figure that played such a huge role in Marie and Karl's life. Marie actually grew up just next door to this crown prince. Now, Clausewitz, Karl von Clausewitz on the other side, we know that this von, which is the lowest title, lowest possible title in Germany, noble title, that was actually absolutely, fake. There's no way around it. His father wanted to serve in the army. Karl von Clausewitz's family, they were Lutheran priests, Lutheran ministers and theologians. But his father wanted to serve in the army. That was the time of Frederick the Great. But of course, to serve in the army as an officer, you had to be noble. And Clausewitz's father was not. What happened is the Seven Years' War, there was a huge casualties. The Prussia took huge casualties. So Frederick the Great kind of needed to relax the standard and accept officers who were for officers people from the middle classes. This is how Clausewitz's father became an officer, and after because he tasted privilege, he saw how many doors opened to him with this phone, he kept the title. And if someone will challenge, he will say, like, did I serve as an officer? Yes, I served as an officer. So the king knew that I'm noble. Like, are you going to challenge the king? But we know from all the documents that Clausewitz was not noble. So when Marie and Karl met, they came from two completely different worlds. But at the same time, that tells us something about Clausewitz, that he had this incredible drive, this incredible ambition to marry this woman who was not his equal. He wanted to belong to this elite. He wanted to belong to this world. So this tells us the incredible drive, the incredible ambition Clausewitz had.
So your book tells the story of their relationship, and it's really fascinating, you know, quite apart from the military history, but just the relationship, again, given the unequal status, they're both intellectuals, yes, which could, perhaps was uncommon, and the way that you describe the relationship is, please do describe it again for our listeners, but then also address this issue of, do you think she was exceptional? Was she representative of a certain kind of woman, or their relationship represented a certain kind of possibility in this?
No, in 18th and 19th century, aristocratic women, they were better educated, better prepared for this life, basically because there was this expectation that they should be able to help their husbands to rise in the military or in civil service. So basically, aristocratic women were very well educated with this purpose in mind. But Marie was actually even more exceptional than this, because not only her family was very well educated, had big dreams for her, but she was herself was very, very interested in the arts, in culture. She was a very political woman. She was a woman who lived and who lived for politics, who lived to know politics, to influence politics, to know people. So that was like, that was really her thing. And of course, this is something that drew Clausewitz. Clausewitz was coming from the provinces. He was this officer from the provinces who sort of never seen things like this. And Marie, for some time, she was not quite sure she wanted to marry him, or if they wanted to, she was not sure if she wanted to have any relationship with him, not because of the money issue or the status issue, but because she kind of saw that she wanted to keep her independence. She wanted to be lady, probably lady in waiting, which were these women, they played also outsized role in the politics behind the scenes. So in some ways, she might have, if she did not marry Clausewitz, she still would have been an important lady in that time. So she was not quite sure she wanted to marry him, but what Clausewitz was so, what was so interesting is that Clausewitz always treated her as his equal. He never tried to diminish her role. Never tried to say, I'm the man, and like I'm the head of the family, and so on. That was nothing like this. Now, partially because he really depended on her, because he did not have any connections. He did not have knowledge how to count in these circles. He did not know much about politics in the beginning of his life. So this is this really interesting dynamic. And then he actually incorporated her in much of his work. He really relied on her. We have so many of the manuscripts are actually written in Marie's handwriting. Not to say that he probably dictated many of the things, but she actually, especially at the end of their lives, she really wanted him to get the attention, recognition, and so on as a writer, as a scholar. So she will sometimes just go and like produce new copies of his writings, because he was a really messy writer. So she would try to help him, and she was constantly, especially at the end of their lives, she really wanted him to publish on war while he was still alive, like really publish on war, get all the attention, get all the recognition, and go into politics. She really wanted him to become either a foreign minister or play, like apply his ideas into a real life and kind of move Europe, European politics. That's how she saw him.
And that's where she's particularly well placed, because politics at this time was essentially courtly politics, and that was where her and her family connections would have come in. So I think what I took out of the book, and you can correct me if I'm reading too much into this, but the kind of crude interpretation of Maria and the publication of the work in the past was that, you know, this great man wrote this book, and then the wife, maybe she changed it, maybe she meddled in the authorship at some level, and we need to figure out how much she kind of affected the work. But when you tell your story, it's clear that she's influencing it from the very beginning and almost to the point of co-authorship.
Yes, but of course, like let me be a little bit clear. She, of course, was the junior partner. Clausewitz was the big brainiac and the big brain and the big ideas. What we see is Clausewitz wanted to be a writer. Like, he wanted to, very early on, he wanted to be, we have probably 1809, 1810, where he tries for the very first time to write something similar to On War. We have like very early manuscripts. So he wanted to explore war as a phenomenon. That was very early on his mind. He wanted to work on these ideas. But in a way, he also understood the limits of his own limits, and he knew that he needed someone to help him develop these ideas. Clausewitz was really good when he mostly he developed his ideas while he was debating. He needed someone to debate. He wanted to hear probably the sound of his voice, you know, and furthered his ideas. That's why we also see in many of the manuscripts that he writes on the right side, then he debates with someone mostly Marie. And then he goes back and puts those ideas. That's why, and he puts them in a manuscript on the left side to be incorporated in the main manuscript. This is why sometimes when you read on war, there is a passages that they swoop in and you're like, where did that come from? Well, this is of this really strange way Clausewitz wrote, this dialogue, this constant debating. So, this is when we see, and sometimes, you know, in their letters, you see how he's starting to struggle with some ideas, and she kind of helps him develop them further, and he thinks about this in very intense way, but sometimes he cannot find his way, and he needs someone to help him, and also, he used her for research. Sometimes in one of the letters, he called her that she was staff officer, that she was like someone that basically was doing a heavy lifting, like the routine work and so on. But she had also very specific ideas about on war and what on war is. And this is there is this whole idea that like Marie just basically did not know what she was doing when he died, and she went and just published the work how it was. Actually, no, she had this idea. She did not. There was on purpose that she decided to publish the book like it was, because she realized if she starts editing, heavily editing, she might try putting her own ideas into the text. This is what actually happened in 1850s with the second edition of On War, where Marie's brother, after her death, Marie's brother Fritz von Bruel, he published a second edition, and he fixed many of the grammatical errors and so on. He fixed all these things. But at the same time, he actually went to much heavier editing, and he actually changed some of the passages about civil-military relations, because he thought like, well, Clausewitz got that part wrong. Let me help you, Clausewitz. So this is why she insisted on publishing the manuscripts the way they were found, because if people just cannot help themselves, this is humility. Like I would probably try to put my own ideas into the text, if I'm allowed to. But there is the other idea that she had, and it was like, people had to be reminded this is unfinished text, and you have to debate it. You have to think about this text. It's not like a Saint Paul's letters to the Christians. It's not the Bible. It's a text to be debated, a text to be wrestled with. And she thought like if people question this text, if they debate this text, if they wrestle with this text, they probably will understand war better. They probably will understand this phenomenon much, much better. So this is why she tried to uphold this Clausewitz idea that theory should be descriptive, not prescriptive.
Interesting. There's another fascinating part of the book I thought was Clausewitz's time in exile when he's in the service of the Russians during the Napoleonic Wars. Focusing on Maria instead of Karl gives you a lot greater insight into kind of domestic politics in Berlin and what's happening, in this tense situation with the French and between France and Prussia.
Yes. Clausewitz is all the heroic part, you know. He's in Russia. He is in Vitebsk. He fights in Smolensk. He fights in Borodino. He sees Moscow burning, you know. That's like all these great things. While Marie is actually left behind, and she has to face the music. She has to pay the bill for his decision. And in many ways, the letters sort of tell us how complicated the whole thing was. Like, the, And to explain to our listeners, Napoleon decided in 1812 to go to Russia. Prussia was on his path to Russia. So the Prussian king had two equally bad options. Either French troops are going to march through Prussia as enemies, or they'll be allies. They'll march as allies, but he has to give them Prussian forces. So part of the Prussian army has to go and fight for Napoleon in Russia. So this is Clausewitz. Many of the officers, you know, that's what the king decided. We have to, you know, make our peace and go and fight for Napoleon. Now, 30-some Prussian officers, they could not. Like, this was horrific idea that you have to go and fight or die, which was possibility. Quite a real possibility to die for Napoleon. To secure Napoleon's grip over Europe, so many of them just basically not only resigned, because there was people who resigned and said like, I just can't do it, but they resigned and they left for Russia to fight for Russia, basically fighting against their own country, against their own countrymen. And then we see how that plays into the politics back home, how this decision drives people, friends who used to be people who used to be friends, how they find themselves on the opposite on the opposite sides, and it's very personal for men, most of them, However, no one expected that Napoleon, that the Russian campaign actually will end up so soon. Actually, like this is one of the things that I did not realize until I read the letters, that everybody expected this war will be for a couple of years. So sort of things happened really, really quickly. Clausewitz thought he's going to be gone for a couple of years. Marie actually thought at some point that she will go and join him in Russia, and they're going to stay in Russia forever. So it's very interesting dynamic that we see in this period.
And a very uncomfortable situation for the wife of a traitor, essentially, and someone who's so closely connected yes. with the court has to face that, as you said, kind of face the music, face those people that her husband yeah. has betrayed. So one other thing, I don't want to get you in trouble, so you'll, you know, choose your words carefully, but obviously the U.S. Army's fascination with Clausewitz has always struck me, and I wondered if, as an instructor at the War College, what kind of insights you have there.
Now, first, I should, because I'm a government worker right now, and I should say that those are my opinions, and they do not express the positions of DOD or the U.S. government. So these are my personal opinions, Vanya Ballinger. I think Clausewitz, well, we all know Clausewitz is more quoted than read, and that's something that I constantly see every day, that people sort of just put one quote from Clausewitz and everything will be okay. And no matter if that quote actually, sometimes I see quotes that have nothing to do with the text, but like people just like to put those quotes thinking like, I have Clausewitz here, I'm safe. So the fascination with Clausewitz, so this is one of the things, the fascination with Clausewitz is basically that, you know, you just put Clausewitz and everything will be fine, while people often do not really understand what he was talking about. And then there is this, part of the fascination is that you can read everything what you want to read with Clausewitz, in Clausewitz. Like many people just read their own ideas in Clausewitz. And because the text is so, well, there is this idea that the text is so hard and nobody understands it, and so no one's going to challenge you, you know. Just put the Clausewitz quote and everything will be okay, because no one understands that text anyway. So, yeah. This is one of the problems with Clausewitz. Now, of course, you know, people, like, kind of sometimes my students are so afraid to quote Clausewitz in front of me because I can slap them right away with no, that's not what he meant, and in another text he meant this, and so on. So it's like really interesting dynamic in the classroom. At the same time, and that's been my experience, if you give more context, if you explain the times and the ideas and the roots of the ideas better, actually the students, they actually start thinking like, wow, he was actually a real officer. He was a guy who had this incredible experience, maybe not a genius, but someone who had a real experience, incredible experience, and he fought long and hard on this idea. So maybe we can actually find something practical in these texts. So and then I had several great papers on Clausewitz where people like took their freedom to go into the text, to debate the text, to wrestle with the text, and probably come to ideas that, you know, they will never come to them before. So this is I always try to go and read this text and try to wrestle with this text. Try to be more like Marie, like take more from Marie, to wrestle with this text, think about this text. And I had several really, really good papers coming from students that fought and wrote, you know, and used with the way and onward the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, that corresponds with my experience too. I think, you know, there's good military history and bad military history, and bad military history, especially in a professional military context, tries to be too prescriptive. But I like this metaphor of wrestling, of, you know, trying to grapple with the complexity as opposed to just looking for the answer and getting back into the sources, of course, in almost every case is the way to do that. So it sounds like you're fighting the good fight. It also can't be lost on you that that you are spending a few years at the War Academy, at the War College, and Clausewitz spent the end of his life at the Kriegsakademie, which can be translated, of course, as War College. So you really are the Clausewitz expert, and maybe even incarnation.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not like I don't have his experience in war. Like I constantly see that I have my limits, I always say, you know, it's not only Clausewitz. I talk always about Scharnhorst, Gerhard von Scharnhorst, who was Clausewitz's mentor. And Scharnhorst was the guy, when Clausewitz first went to the military academy in Berlin, he almost failed it because he was not prepared like everybody else. So Scharnhorst is the guy who saw Clausewitz's talent, took him under his wing, and Clausewitz after that graduated on top of his class. Surprise. When you have great mentors, that's what happens. Scharnhorst, his writings are not so sophisticated as Clausewitz's ones. Scharnhorst was someone who was not so sophisticated, but he had incredible vision and incredible ability to open the doors for his students and come with ideas and connect people and network. And he is the father of the military reforms in Prussia. So this is the guy who comes with the ideas for military reforms and so on. So I always say, if we want to have more of Karl von Clausewitz, people like Karl von Clausewitz, we have to have much more like Gerhard von Scharnhorst. So I like hope maybe, I don't know. I'm not that, but like I see in many ways Scharnhorst, and I hope to give my students the same feeling that the sky is the limit. The sky is the limit. You can go and you can do it. And yes, and just think hard on these questions and wrestle with these questions, and yeah, maybe something great will come out of it.
Good. So this sounds like a good moment to ask you what you're working on now.
What's another Clausewitz book.
Cement your reputation as the Clausewitz.
It was actually an idea for article. It's basically Clausewitz's last campaign. 1830, he seals his manuscripts of On War. He seizes his work On War because he thinks there's going to be another major war in Europe. This is the July Revolution in France and all these things. So I was thinking, maybe if I go, because Clausewitz becomes chief of staff of the Prussian Army of Observation that it sent on the border and all these things. So I was like, maybe if I find, and many of the writings are still preserved from that time, like if I can go in the archives and find his orders or his memorandums, military writing documents, and look at those documents and see if he is applying his own ideas from On War in those documents, his most mature ideas, is he applying his own ideas or not to those complex problems? Maybe that will be really interesting to see, you know, Clausewitz, the practitioner, how he is applying his own ideas. Luckily for me, like I said, many of the documents are actually preserved, but then I found in the German archives again, there's actually most of Clausewitz's memorandums, operational plans and so on, they're also actually in the archives. So I was so lucky to find them.
Well, we'll look forward to that. One of the things I do with my authors as well is find out what they're reading, because part of the purpose of this podcast is to introduce solid scholarship, solid military history to an audience that can be kind of overwhelmed with the schlock that gets published in this field. So what's something you think people should be reading?
I recently read a book that I really liked. It's Gregory Carlton, and it's Russia, the Story of War. It's I was born in socialist Bulgaria, so many of the Soviet movies and so on, that's like part of my own life stories. So I really like Gregory Carlton. Gregory Carlton, he teaches at Tufts University. I really love this book because he's talking about the role of war in Russian history. Now, if you think you're gonna read like about big battles, that's not that book. It's not a big about the big battles and so on, or big wars and so on. It's more like how war or understanding of war and so on shaped the Russian society and the Soviet society. And it's really interesting for me because I've read many of these books as a kid. You know, we had them like the propaganda and so on in school, but also many of the movies. And it's really interesting to someone who takes that knowledge, that cultural knowledge, and military history, cultural history, and fuses them, and tells us about the Russian society, how it was developed, and how the understanding of war shapes a society, shapes a state.
So this leads me to ask whether you have a favorite Soviet war film.
Well, like all the kids, I've watched the three tankers and the dog. So I guess it's kind of I really like the Mornings Here Quiet, which are for a female squad, women's soldiers. I like that very much.
Well, maybe you can send me the Russian titles, and we'll find out what the exact equivalents are, and we'll post it on along with the podcast.
The Mornings Are Quiet. I think they had a remake a couple of years ago, and it's actually with English subtitles. The remake, okay. So you can watch it.
I teach a class on war films here at Temple, and I use Ivan's Childhood, which is one that's readily available and widely known, but I'd be interested to introduce some others. Well, thank you for your time, Vanya. It's been fascinating. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.